What are we celebrating?
Oh, you're a smart chick. You figure it out.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Melrose Place. Today's episode is season four, episode... Oh, my God. Episode two. Melrose is like a box of chocolates. End of show. Now, here are your hosts. Bunting.
Hello, Bunting.
Spackle. Oh, boy. What are we celebrating? Well, it's not Melrose Place titling conventions, but we do have something to celebrate for Independence Week. Again with this episode 54 that drops July 2nd. Let's watch Marcia Cross on CSI. She is in season 2, episode 11, Organ Grinder. I'm just guessing here. I don't think they mean monkeys with that reference. Anyway, it's available on Hulu, so we hope you'll declare your independence from this show for a sec and watch along with us.
Indeed, that link is in the show notes. We can also announce the day before that, Again With Them for June is dropping July 1st. This is, of course, our recap of Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling's recap podcast, 90210MG. Oh, boy. I've already listened to the first two of these as we record this. Matthew Lawrence is the guest in the second of the episodes we'll be discussing. And wow, does that guy seem like he has some anger issues. I can't wait to get into that one. Wow.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, those episodes are available for our patrons at the $5 level and up. So join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Let's talk about our C plot for Melrose is like a box of chocolates, which, by the way, Forrest Gump had come out more than a year before this episode aired. I just checked to confirm because I was like, it seems like that's an old reference. It was.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. I mean, it's unacceptable anyway.
Oh, yes.
But, and it's still not the worst one. I will forever be mad. Forever. About the season 3 premiere.
I am curious, Melrose. Is that what that was called? Yeah. That's a bad one. Anyway, our C-plot here. Speaking of unacceptable, Jane and Richard have a bad time at the office. So at the good old Mackenzie Hart office in the strip mall, Jane is directing some underlings about a design when Richard walks in behind her and immediately undermines her. Clip two.
This is too radical. Jane, this is not the way we do it at Mackenzie Hart.
It is now.
Why don't you ladies take a break?
Lighten up, Richard. A rehash of Mac's tired old designs won't get us a spread in Vogue.
Well, that's not your call, is it?
Fine. Then you can just go into the antique clothing business, and while you're at it, maybe you can bring back the bell-bottoms.
I resent the hell out of that. Mac was a star. She sent trends in American fashion. Who the hell are you to criticize her?
You didn't used to feel that way.
That's right. But you've changed, Jane. Your ego is so overblown that you can't even see that this isn't about you or us. This is about the inadequacies of your designs.
Fine. If my designs are so inadequate, you can get some hacks in here to finish the line, but I'm not hanging around for the wake.
Okay.
Are we supposed to be on her side / think her cutting a slit in a sleeve is a groundbreaking... Oh, God.
Yeah.
Also, shut the fuck up, Jane.
Yeah. Again, his wife... just died. And as she's walking away from him off that wake line, she like smugly smiles to herself, which is extra untoward. But at the same time, it seems not to have occurred to Richard, like, you can fire Jane. Like, if you hate her now, and I don't blame you, just get rid of her. Like, she doesn't need to finish this line for your wife. You can find someone else.
Yeah. Also, what even was her job when she was hired, you know, 17 minutes ago, that she's giving orders to these people who are now side-eyeing you for overruling her? Like,
yeah.
Also, yeah, fire Jane. Come on.
Or, like, maybe take a few days off. Like, all of these people being back at work already is, I know it's a soap, but still wild. Like,
and also, what were they told?
That's another
question.
What
was the rest of the company told?
Yeah. Do they know she's dead?
Yeah. She's at a farm upstate, like,
I mean, they could just say she's getting massive plastic surgery. She is 44 years old, Sarah.
Oh, by the way, on her plaque in the last episode, she, according to that, she was 40.
Oh!
Guys. Fuck you, dude.
Gross. So then Jane comes to Richard's hideous house to tell him he was out of line the other day, but she cares about him, maybe too much. Richard didn't want to hurt her, but she doesn't understand his relationship with Mackenzie. No one does. This is what we were saying in the season three finale. What was your relationship? And his elaboration does not really help. Clip
no.
three.
It was more than business. Mac walked in to my lecture hall at Harvard, and it was like I had known him my whole life. She was my best friend. She was my lover. She was my teacher. We had problems with our marriage, but our bond as friends had never changed. We trusted each other. We always told each other the truth. That is, until I fell in love with you. And if I had just been honest with her, she wouldn't have followed me to your apartment that night.
Richard, it's not your responsibility. It was Kimberly. She killed Mackenzie.
Okay. From that clip, did you get what the Hearts' relationship status was when she was still alive? Because I did not.
Forget it, Tara. It's Chinatown. She was my sister. Slap. She was my daughter. No, I don't. Also, Harvard?
Okay.
Does Harvard have a clown college that you failed out
that,
of?
I remembered, you know, the episode of 90210 when Cindy sets Kelly and Brenda up with what turned out to be Seth Green and some other kid, and they think they're from
Princeton Day School.
Yes, I was thinking it was Harvard, and then I remembered, oh, no, it was Princeton. But I was like, was he at Princeton Harvard School for boys, making boys into men?
Oh, my God. I mean, and then his, like, Noel Crane hair is so floppy. And
yep.
The whole thing is just bonkers. And then I could not stop staring at the apartment.
So ugly.
Kept expecting Edward James Olmos to, like, lurk out of a potted plant to be like,
why
don't you fire Jane? Like, that's a good question.
So Jane at least apologizes at the end of this, finally, for being insensitive to his feelings. But I'm pretty sure she's going to forget that by episode three.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to our B plot. Allison returns to D&D, which it turns out Brooke the heiress can't ditch just yet.
So cut good.
Over to Jane's place. She's making breakfast for herself and her roomie, a released from the hospital, Allison. Billy comes by on his way to work. He wants to see Allison, but Allison, down the hall in her robe and sunglasses, declines to see him. She still wants him to leave her alone. She'd rather live her life in the dark than see him with Brooke. Billy says he'll leave, but he won't stop caring about Allison. And when he's gone, Jane helps her to the table and congratulates her for the way she's handling Billy. Clip four.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're playing your pity card. You're pushing him away with one hand while drawing him in with the other. Oatmeal's at 12 o'clock, juice, coffee, and silverware is at 3.
Okay. Jane, I am not manipulating Billy. I'm just sick and tired of not getting what I want.
Tell me about it. God. For years, I have watched certain people in my life get everything their heart desires because they don't care who they have to step on. Well, I'm not a doormat, Allison. And neither are you. I think it's time that we did some stepping.
Yeah, I don't see that journey for either of you.
I really don't.
also
think this works at all.
No. And furthermore, for Allison to be like, I'm sick of not getting what I want. Bitch, you were the president of your agency like 8 episodes ago. You know, you mm-hmm. got what you wanted. You just fucked it up. That's different.
Yeah. You were fucking JAG. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Some people have real problems.
Yes.
You're not one of them.
You were making 6 figures in Hong Kong in a job they made up for you. Did they make it up just to get you out of the country? Yes, but you still had the job. That doesn't mean it wasn't a good job.
It was Billy.
It was Billy.
And continues to be Billy.
Yeah.
All these machinations, all these heel turns for Billy.
No. So Jane asks what Allison wants. She doesn't say it's Billy. She wants her old job back. Why?
Why?
Why? But Jane, bad friend, urges her to go for it and gets Allison to join her in a pact. Clip 5.
You do. And you're going to promise me. No. We're going to promise each other that from now on, we look out for number one. Promise?
Promise.
Thelma and Louise forever.
All right, but no driving off cliffs.
I don't know. I feel like that's a fine outcome for this.
I bet you a nickel that was a Courtney Thorne Smith ad lib. Because it was so swallowed as they went into the credits. Mm-hmm. Like, it just was.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. She clawed that back from being really inappropriate.
Yep. So then, Brooke gets divots in the grass walking on her chunky mules to her dad's golf lesson at the
thank
country
you.
Club.
That bugged the shit out of me. Like,
I knew it would. You come from flats. Golf people. So he's expecting Brooke home any day, but she claims she and Billy are deliriously happy. And in that case, Haley is too. No, he's not. The Armstrongs and the lawyer have a meeting the next day. She guesses she can wait another couple of days to find out how much her mother left her. Clip 6.
Brooke, maybe you better not start counting your money until after.
Daddy, let's face it. Mother loved me. And more than anything, she wanted me to be financially secure. And now that I've satisfied the last condition of her will by getting married, I'm going to be.
You mean you and Billy are going to be?
Right.
Also, is the creepy thing between this father and daughter that they were, like, fighting over the mother's affections? Because,
interesting.
Like, face it, mother loved me. Like, uh-huh.
But, yeah.
yeah.
But
they really play this so well, though, that, like, I think even they don't exactly know what the source of the creepola is, so they're just like, it could be really any kind of statutory malfeasance.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I watched that Stars in the House reunion, and Thomas Calabro and Marsha Cross were talking about, like, their chemistry and how they decided, like, how far to push what they were given to make it, like, even bonkerser.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine something similar with Perry King, who was a total pro, and Kristen Davis, like, coming up to be for him to be like, what if we did it this way? And her being like, yes, totally. You know?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because it is a soap. Like, you may as well make your own fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, occasionally I expect him to reach into, like, a ficus, pull out a mustache, put it on his face and twirl it. And it's like, I'm glad everyone's having a good time. It is pleasurable to watch.
Yes.
Especially after the last, you know, 2/3 of 90210, when it's like, nobody wants to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Least of all us.
It's true. Anyway, back to the scene. There's just one more thing. Could Brooke just get a quick advance on next month's allowance? Haley currently tells her she should get an allowance from her husband. And she thinks he's kidding, but he very much is not. Clip 7.
You married the wrong guy, dear. And for better or for worse, you're Billy's responsibility now.
Okay. What you just heard at the end of that is Haley driving away in his deal with it golf cart. So good.
I am actually a little bit surprised they didn't, like, completely lean into this and have him run over her foot.
it's very good. Speaking of Billy, he's talking to Brooke at the office when they both look up and see Jane leading Allison in by the arm. And you can tell it's 1995 because Allison is in head-to-toe periwinkle. It's a ribbed, sleeveless turtleneck up top and an ankle-length, shiny satin skirt below.
Pretty sure I had that ensemble.
Oh, boy.
From Express.
That's tall privilege, wearing an ankle-length skirt. Nothing I ever did.
It was no privilege, I assure you.
And, you know, to be fair to Allison, we may presume Jane was the one who dressed her because it's a very Jane look.
Mm-hmm.
And while Brooke seethes, Billy goes to see what's up. Allison's there to talk to Amanda. And then Brooke inserts herself. Clip 8.
Allison, it's Brooke. Amanda has a full schedule. Do you have an appointment?
Get out of my way, Brooke.
God, that felt good.
Mm-hmm. Just keep reminding yourself the best defense is a good offense.
Okay. You can see this in the visual aids. The end of that when she was like, out of my way, Brooke, shoves her.
Yeah, like a clothesline arm to the neck, like stone cold Allison Parker. And then Kristen Davis's Well, I Never faces in the background. It's so good.
This is, of course, a gif you can see in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm.
They arrive in Amanda's office where Jane thoughtfully warns Allison that Amanda's rearranged the furniture. This is also where we see Allison's wearing this pastel satin number with sneakers, which was the style at the time.
At the time,
Well, with an ankle-length skirt, it's a bit much. A knee-length skirt or shorter, absolutely. But it looks a little weird to me.
I mean, I get what's weird to me is that she and Jane are both wearing Keds, which is like a little bit. I just feel like it's a little weird that someone in wardrobe wasn't like, oh, we should put someone in, like, I don't know, flatform sneakers.
Oh, I thought Allison was in Jack Purcell's. That's what it looked like to me. But this is in the visual aids, too. Listeners, let us know.
Yes. Settle this for us, listeners. I just wear sneakers with literally everything, including pajamas at this point, so...
All right.
What do I know?
After pleasantries, Allison gets to it. Clip 9.
Amanda, I want my old job back. And if you refuse to give it to me, I'm prepared to sue you for discrimination against the visually challenged.
Oh, now we're making ADA cases? Okay.
Yeah.
Is A... B, bitch, you got fired for cause when you were cited, so does not apply.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter.
I mean, what's she going to do, put you on the balcony with the fax machine?
But it doesn't matter, because Amanda says Allison doesn't have to threaten her. She would be thrilled to have Allison back starting tomorrow. So at the office next day, Brooke runs down Amanda to confirm the rumors she's heard about Allison coming back to work there. Do you want to talk about her pink suit in this scene?
Oh, God. I mean, it read to me as more of this, funeral home lavender.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's double-breasted. There's, like, super wide lapels. It's a fit problem. Like, Kristen Davis can wear almost anything.
Yeah.
But first of all, this is, like, maybe not a great color for her, like go in some direction that's not this.
Right.
Second of all, it just doesn't fit properly. And then they have her in an A-line skirt, and like that's not, like it needed to either be a little longer or more of a pencil skirt. Like it is extremely difficult not only to make her look dumpy, but for me to then figure out, like, how the fuck did they even do that? That's like fusing the atom. Like how?
Yeah.
So like I spent a lot of time with these freeze frames. And I think the diagnosis is like the skirt just cuts her in a weird way. And it's also hiked up a little. Mm-hmm. Like I think the bike pack is fucking her up somehow. Anyway, check it out in the visual aids. You can tell us. But the other at least misdemeanor offense against Davis is that this is like peak Amanda matchy-matchy miniskirt suit era, and Amanda's in a lipstick red number that would also look fire on Davis, and it's just rude, I feel, to have them in the same frame.
Yeah,
it hurts my soul.
About this outfit, it looks like the fabric is really thick.
Yeah,
to
that
me,
too.
Which I think also makes it look like it's wearing her. And the lapels, like, you're so right. They're, like, clownishly wide. Like, yeah. Put polka dots on them, she can go straight to work at a children's party. Like, it's just...
Yeah. Which, that was the style. You see a lot of these, like, pointlessly massive lapels on various people's outfits at this time. But it's like, she does have a way of, and also, like, the mini skirts that have, like, the little kick pleat and then the slit on one side, and then you can see the underskirt. Like, she can really wear those. She can wear, like, it tries to be classic. It doesn't quite work. This is just, like, bad fit, doesn't go with the mic pack. This is not your gabardine. I don't know. It was upsetting.
It's bad.
Yeah.
So Amanda confirms the rumors, adding that the shit they did to get rid of Allison was dirty and they owe her this now. Plus, she needs to focus on something other than her handicap. And Brooke airily suggests that they just let Allison enroll in a school for the blinds where she can learn to crochet.
What a bitch.
But adding insult to injury, Amanda's in fact giving Allison half of Brooke's job. And Brooke declares she's not sharing anything with Allison and is further pissed to learn that for her half a job, Allison will get back her title of senior ad exec. And Brooke whines that she's only a junior ad exec, and Amanda shrugs that seniority has its privileges. And Brooke checks that Amanda isn't going soft, but Amanda says she's growing up a little, and Brooke should try it. Good luck. So then, at an after-hours meeting, the D&D Brain Trust is trying to break a campaign for a fashion line. Not Mackenzie Hart's, something else. And since we saw her last, Brooke has apparently decided to support Allison's ideas, presumably to get at Amanda somehow.
Or because she knows they're bad and Allison will blow herself up. That would be my angle.
Yeah. Cough. Could be.
It'd work, too. Take notes, Brooke.
Yeah. So Amanda gives Allison the floor to pitch her ideas, but she says she has to go to the bathroom and then awkwardly adds that someone's going to have to help her get there. And Amanda designates Brooke, who just sits there with her chin trembling until Amanda's like, let's go. And Brooke starts crying and says someone else will have to do it. So Amanda tells Brooke again to get to it. They all agreed to make accommodations for Allison, but Brooke runs out crying. And Billy gets up in surprise, and Andrew Shue is so remote from his own body, he immediately puts his hands in his pockets. Like, he just stands there and watches her go through the glass.
Also, I was really having this anxiety about, like, but Allison has to pee.
Yeah.
Like, could someone, I don't care, get an extra.
Right. Billy can lead her to the door. I'm sure she can remember where it is from there.
Yeah, probably.
It's also after hours. Like, no one else is going to be in there if she hits the wrong door and is, like, occupied. Like, not a big deal.
Or pees in the sink. Who cares? Like, someone give her a hand and then worry about baby Brooke later.
Yeah.
Or there's going to be a different kind of Brooke in the conference room.
Yep. Ugh. So Amanda goes after Brooke and tells her to go apologize to Allison if she wants to keep her job. So in that case, Brooke quits, to which Amanda elaborately rolls her eyes. Brooke adds that she's about to come into a lot of money, so she doesn't need this job. Cut to the manor, where Brooke, Haley, and John, the lawyer, have assembled in the unhatched chicken counting parlor. Thank you. Brooke would like to know exactly how much money she's getting, but it's not quite time for the meeting yet, which is when Billy walks in, whom Brooke was evidently not expecting, which she tries to dismiss him. Clip 10.
If you take a seat, we'll get started.
Daddy, Billy has better things to do at this time.
Not really.
Another inadvertent classic for Mr. Andrew Shue.
Indeed. So John gets to it. Brooke's supposed to get equal annual payments over 10 years, the first arriving upon her marriage. Guess what? She never told Billy about this, and he would like to know why. But Brooke just ignores him, taking the first check and frowning at it. Clip 11.
$10,000? How the hell am I supposed to live on $10,000?
I'm sorry if you're disappointed, Brooke, but the money was never intended as a dowry, simply a wedding present.
Well, that's it.
Billy? Billy, I can explain!
Okay.
Why are you so determined to destroy my happiness?
Don't blame me for your troubles. Marriage is based on trust, and as far as Billy's concerned, well, he simply can't trust you, can he?
Nope. Is A. B.
Yeah.
she should have known there was going to be something up with this inheritance when Haley did not insist that Billy sign a prenup. Just saying.
Yeah.
So at Shooters that night, Jane brags to Brooke that she can get her a wholesale discount on Mackenzie Hart stuff. And Brooke loves a bargain, she says. And Billy snits that Brooke is really watching her pennies these days. Just kind of funny. The next day, Brooke's back at the office, forced to eat shit to Amanda, thanks to her mother's principled stance against inherited wealth. Brooke would do anything if Amanda would hire her back. Obviously, Amanda wants to know what happened to all that money Brooke was going to come into, and Brooke dodges that. She realized she still needs a career to feel fulfilled, money or no. Sure, we all do.
Yeah, cough. Good save.
So anyway, clip 12.
Well, lucky for you, I've grown soft. That was what you accused me of, right? So you can come back to the agency, but not as an executive.
As what then?
Allison's assistant. Take it or leave it.
Well, I must have grown soft too. I'll take it.
Good.
Dude, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, when Amanda leaves, she smiles smugly to herself. So it seems like she's got a plan. And perhaps it is just to let Allison pee herself in the office and see what happens. Who knows?
I mean, metaphorically or literally, I don't think that's the worst plan.
True.
Beats Allison's plan.
True also. So that night, Billy comes by with takeout for Allison just in time to hear a crash and her yelps coming into the can to find she had slipped in the shower. He helps her up and then holds her before getting a towel and wrapping her in it. He's super horned. They're about to have a moment when Jane comes home and he takes off, declining a dinner invitation. By the way, this is also where we see Jane is in a shiny floral T-shirt and a matching, well, not the same print, but just also shiny satin skirt. It was the shiny era. It was a tough time.
Oh, my God. It made me feel so sweaty. Like, those were going out clothes for me back then. And I just, like, remember being crammed into whatever brownies, which had no air conditioning, in my non-breathable poly satin top, being like, this is a good band, which is nice because I'm going to die.
Yes.
She looks great, though. It makes her boobs look real big, which.
Yes. I mean, she can wear it, but it looks cheap as hell.
Oh, God. It is cheap as hell.
Yeah. Anyway, once Billy is gone, clip 13.
Hey, what's up with him?
Guess it's been a while since Billy's seen me naked.
Allison, you're so bad.
Yuck.
It's gross. Billy, so just get on with it.
Yeah. So at the manor, we don't see Haley with a mustache that he's retrieved from the ficus, but you get the next best thing. He's in a plutocrat's velvet dressing gown.
Oh, having, God.
Sipping from a snifter of brandy when Brooke shows up. Billy has forgiven her for withholding the fact of her inheritance. Again, he did? When did he do that? We didn't see it.
Must be on the three-hole golf course in the backyard, on which they're apparently having all their conversations. I don't know.
Anyway, she wants to know if Haley can forgive her too, which of course he can, and they hug a little weirdly. Mm-hmm. Once she has secured a snifter of her own, she says she has good news. She's back at D&D, but now she's working for Allison again and is trying to be mature about it. After all, the poor thing is blind. And Haley says he's always liked Allison. Why? And was sorry to hear about her situation. Brooke is sorry, too, even though Allison is still in love with Billy. Haley wishes things could have worked out better. Sorry enough to loan her some money? Sure. So Brooke whines that she needs to get away from Allison, starting with moving out of the complex. And Haley would like to know how she plans to explain $100,000 to her husband. But she's going to get her own checking account at a different bank. And Haley writes the check, but he's got one condition. Clip 14.
You don't get it until you file for divorce.
Sex guitar, sure.
Also, I mean, I would say do it, but it's just a loan. If it was a gift, different story, but, you know.
Like, yeah, this storyline is so weird. Like, again, as we've been saying, like, we have to give the performers credit for sort of, like, playing all of this, like, for lack of a better term, elastically enough. Mm-hmm. So when the writers finally figure out what the fuck this is and how many contracted episodes they have left for everybody, that they can like put it in motion and they haven't done things they have to undo with their performance.
Yep.
But like, he'll do all of these things to get Allison out of Brooke's way to get Billy. But then when she gets Billy, he's like, him? Like,
yeah,
dude, which Bill did you think we were talking about?
Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. It is
so
strange.
So credit to Perry King for being able to make this sort of really watchable and interesting. And you don't look down that much over the canyon. That's the gap in logic here. So
I truly never thought of it. And you're so right.
Also, dads in real life are just not this gross. TV,
no.
Calm down.
Yeah. On to our A-plot. Jake drives Sydney back toward Michael, whose colleagues at the hospital are up to all kinds of shit. That was the only umbrella I could give this plot line, because it's just like, and here's everybody else, because they're all intertwined.
Yeah.
So while construction goes on outside, Amanda yells through the door about how long Sydney's taking in the shower, because Amanda has a meeting. Sydney's also been thinking she should get first dibs on the phone and the TV. After all, it is her apartment. So Amanda runs out of patience, turning off the water, jamming a towel in Sydney's hands, and threatening to evict her, which is quite illegal, but, you know,
also, just flush. It's so much faster.
Especially in that old place. Like, it would definitely work.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, since Sydney's living there rent-free, Amanda thinks she can pay for the utilities and leaves, and Sydney makes a snot face at her, which you can see in the visual aids because it's cute. So then Joe and Matt come back to the complex in the morning, establishing that he'll be staying with her while his place is under construction. And Joe then sees Jake returning to his place, and when they speak, it sounds like he's still drunk, in my opinion.
Yep, agree.
So apparently he wants to keep the fun rolling because he's throwing a party at Shooters. Joe asks what they're celebrating, and he's like, you're smart, you'll figure it out. So he goes in, and we get this exchange, clip 15.
What was that all about?
I have no idea. Ever since Jess died, it's been really weird.
Yeah, that's the thing that happens sometimes when someone's grieving, especially when their feelings about the dead person are complicated. Mm-hmm. Joe?
And they killed them.
Joe?
Like,
anyway.
It's been really weird. Just go out for junior varsity. It's not that big of a fucking deal. Jesus.
Like, not only Jake kind of killed him, but kind of didn't, but, like, Jess died under his body. Like, Jake landed on him.
Yeah.
A lot went on, you guys.
Yeah. Jess basically saved his life and broke his fall.
Right. Anyway.
And then broke permanently.
Matt is worried that Jake is going to self-destruct, so put a bit in there. So then Peter goes to Kimberly's hospital room, where she's crying and cowering in the corner and reproaching him for leaving her alone for so long. And by the way, he's now in a lab coat, so I guess he got his job back off screen.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to talk slash recap the last couple of episodes. While she insists upon her innocence, she doesn't know how to do any of the things he says she did. And only a crazy person would try. And he's like, yeah? Clip 16. Huh?
What are you saying? You think I'm crazy?
Yeah, sit down. In the next few days, you're going to be indicted by a grand jury. They're going to charge you with first-degree murder, among other things. And at that trial, Michael, Amanda, Sydney, everyone who lived in that building is going to testify against you. I'm going to have to testify against you. Now, Kim, if you're not crazy at best, you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison. Probably even face a death sentence.
No.
Now, listen to me. I don't want to lose you. So do this for me, for us. Tell him you're insane. Plead insanity.
I can't.
I can't help you.
Okay, a few things about this. First of all, a hallmark of a, let's say, dissociative incident or disorder is that you're like, no, I'm fine. Like, what? Like, adamantly denying that you ever hear someone calling your name on the street is like a sign that you actually hear voices. So, I don't know, like, figure out how to communicate to the audience that you know where this is going and start going there. Because here's the other issue in a, especially in a California set soap. If the state of California wasn't going to give Charles Manson the needle, there's absolutely no way they're going to give it to Kimberly. So when they're talking about like, this is a death penalty case, like, yeah, but no. Mm-hmm. Like the Menendezes got married. So, you know.
Yeah.
This doesn't work as a stakes leverager. And we all know this is not going to be a permanent condition anyway. So just like figure out what you're doing with this plot and start doing it. Because in this particular plot, the caginess is not all that interesting. I mean, okay, in an upcoming scene, there are diversions, but I don't know. This is making me impatient. That's all.
I have another question. And I know I complained in the last episode that, you know, when you're up to an E plot, there's too many people. But does Kimberly not have a lawyer? Like, shouldn't she be getting this advice about her case from that person?
Yeah. And, like, why wouldn't, I don't know. Like, this just seems like such a clear-cut case of, like, send her to the state hospital.
Yeah.
Forever. Like, she has serious problems. From a plot standpoint, it just doesn't make... It doesn't make sense. It's sort of interesting for like a few minutes to watch these actors trying to like leave a bunch of things open to interpretation. But then it's like, okay, figure out what the angle is and drive towards it.
Right.
Faster.
Especially when you remember like, oh shit, two main cast credits people are both currently indicted for murder.
Right now.
It's a little sloppy. Sort your shit out.
And we have like two crazy schemey doctors. Like, why don't they make out? Or like Paul pulls off his like face makeup to, you know, face off style to reveal that he's actually Chris. Thought I forgot, didn't ya? I'll never forget.
Or he's actually Kimberly. Like, either way.
Or Kimberly's actually Chris, or Chris was Mackenzie. Who knows?
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities.
So Peter and Michael have lunch with Calvin Hobbs, who tells Peter it's fine to supervise Kimberly's treatment as long as it doesn't interfere with his other duties. Michael has questions, some rude, some pertinent. Clip 16.
Some both.
Why are you wasting your time treating a lunatic?
I don't want to discuss this with you, Michael.
You're a surgeon. What are you going to do for her? Cut out the bad part of her brain? There won't be anything left.
Did you ever really love her, or were you just using her?
Oh, come on, it takes one to know one.
True. But, also true, Peter's a surgeon.
Yeah.
All right.
Also true, Michael is also a surgeon, but is still a physician and should not be calling people things like lunatics or, you know, other terms that we'll hear a little later.
We will. Calvin Hobbs tells them to shut up and notes that if they're going to go into practice together, they should try to get along, which reminds Peter that they're looking for office space, preferably at the hospital. And Hobbs is putting them off when he glances up and sees Matt walking in. He's appalled that Matt would have the nerve to show his face, but Michael says Matt hasn't been convicted of anything. And lest we forget, Michael's also on bail at the moment. See, again, too much legal stuff happening at once. So Hobbs says Matt is filing for a leave of absence and then good riddance. But before Matt can do that, he looks up and sees Paul flirting with a lady nurse and decides to potentially fuck up his case, I guess? Clip 18.
Enjoy while it lasts, Paul, because the truth is going to come out and everyone's going to know you're a cold-blooded murderer.
Just stay the hell away from me, Fielding, or I won't be responsible for my actions.
Take my advice. Watch your back. Paul kills everybody that he gets involved with.
Oh, boy. Matt. Not good.
No. And, like, Paul, this actor is so good. He looks sort of turned on by the whole thing, which, mm-hmm. like, you're gross and horrible. Well played.
Yep. So Michael ends up being the one to pull Matt off Paul, saying he's not worth it, hustling him out. Back at the complex, Sydney's chilling on the couch watching TV when a knock comes at the door and Amanda imperiously tells her to get it. It is Peter, so Amanda kicks Sydney out. And then Peter tells Amanda about his handling of Kimberly's case, which Amanda thinks could be detrimental to his career. But Paul doesn't care that much about his career anymore. People matter, too. And Amanda is dubious that he's changed, joined the club. Peter doesn't care if Amanda believes in him, but he cares about Kimberly and he doesn't want her locked up for the rest of her life. But Amanda is less empathetic, calling Kimberly a female Terminator. But Peter says she was pushed to do what she did by Michael, Sydney, and Amanda, and Peter himself. And they all have regrets, but what are they going to do about them? And Amanda surmises that Peter's asking her not to file stalking charges against Kimberly. And he's begging her, actually. And Amanda's like, well, in that case, still no. Over to Matt's lawyer's office. And hey, I was right. Clip 19.
That scene you caused in the cafeteria didn't help your case. As a matter of fact, it made it a lot worse.
I didn't know it could get any worse.
Well, as far as the police are concerned, that was a lover's quarrel. Further proof that you and Paul conspired together to murder his wife.
Look, I know. All right, look, I'm sorry. It was a mistake. I just lost it. I mean, he's sitting there with some playmate masquerading as a candy striper, acting like he doesn't have a care in the world.
I don't care why you did it. Just don't do it again.
Sure. Yeah, my word.
Good.
What might work? Continuing to not beat him up anymore?
Yeah.
Agree?
So once she's done yelling at him, Alicia says she heard Paul's been in for questioning twice. And Matt assumes that means Paul's going to break any minute now, but Alicia's not so sure. He could admit his guilt, but claim Matt was the mastermind to cut himself an immunity deal to testify. And Matt sputters that such testimony would be completely false. Yes, imagine a witness lying, especially a murderer. Matt.
Next thing you know, you'll say cops are doing it.
So then, a real estate agent shows office space to Peter and Michael, the latter of whom has no chill about how much he wants it. So when they've gotten rid of the agent, Michael says this, clip 20.
I think we should go for it. I mean, you might even like this place so much, you'll stop wasting your time on nut burgers like my soon-to-be ex-wife.
That someone else uses the term nut burger is, you know... It brings him close to my heart. Not as close as Jack Wagner is standing in a giant, open, three-room medical suite. He has to be, like, on top of Mancini's toe, like, shoe toes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what's going on there. It's weird. I should say that I don't dislike it. It's just weird.
Yeah. So since Michael brought her up.
Why haven't they kissed? That's the weird part.
Since Michael brought her up, Peter tells Michael he doesn't think he should go through with a divorce because Kimberly can't handle it right now, and Peter has advised her to plead insanity. Michael scoffs that Peter's her doctor, her lover, and now her lawyer. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's sure Peter has an angle, but he doesn't know what it could be. Surely not love. And Peter then grabs Michael, Sarah, as he says he's riding Peter's coattails, and if Michael wants this to work, he needs to get off Peter's back about Kimberly and... Michael poutily drops it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Peter, if you don't want him grabbing your coattails, why don't you try standing more than 6 feet away from him? Social distancing. See how it goes.
Yeah. So back at the hospital, Kimberly refuses to cooperate with an ink blot test. She needs someone to listen to her, not a robot head shrinker, which maybe he is. Sarah, who is this guy?
This is a doctor from a Felicity episode Advice for the Lovelorn. Dennis Lipscomb. That's the Twilight Zone episode.
Yep.
In case you remember that, like, his delivery is extremely distinctive, but I couldn't quite pin down, like, where do I know this actor from?
Mm-hmm.
And the second I saw that on the IMDb, I was like, oh, yes.
So here, he's been appointed by the court to determine whether Kimberly is fit to stand trial. She demands to see an actual therapist, and when he tells her that's Peter's call, she begs him not to try to pigeonhole her this way. So he agrees to her request for a paper and pencil so she can draw something for him, what even sharpening dumbass. The pencil for her, which, of course, she uses to stab him just through the hand. I was expecting the eye or the jugular or something.
Same here. And I'm sure they, like, wrote it that way. And S&P was like, how about the webbing of the thumb?
Yeah. So once he's pinned to the desk, she runs out. And Peter shows up just then and finds her trying the locked ward door before racing up to the roof, which that door should probably be locked too, just saying. She refuses to spend the rest of her life in a mental hospital. She would rather die. And Peter tells her not to jump, and she snorts that it can't be because he loves her, because no one cares about her. And the orderlies arrive just then to try and chase her down, but as she goes running off, Peter dismisses them and yells after her that he won't let anyone hurt her. And Kimberly gasps that he may have slept with her, but he doesn't love her. And as she looks down at the parking lot, she says she needs someone to love her again. Can he tell her that he does? And then he does say he loves her. And as she crumples, he wraps his arms around her. Cut to the shooter's party, where Matt is stressing about his meeting with Alicia and Joe's trying to talk him off the ledge, metaphorically this time. The only way out is for him to force Paul into confessing, which, good luck with that. Like, this guy hatched this entire plan, including a trap door, before you started fucking, so he's probably pretty buttoned up. But anyway, Joe notes that if she had just listened to her lawyer's advice, she might still have custody of her child right now, so maybe Matt should listen to his.
Your lawyer was terrible. That's not why you don't have custody of your kid, but sure.
Yeah. So then she looks across the bar where Jake is talking to Amanda while staring at Joe, and when they catch each other's eye, he waggles her fingers at her, and she just looks exhausted. So cut to Jake and Amanda, where Amanda's suggesting Jake should maybe slow down, drinks-wise. And he thinks she should lighten up, and then yells a toast to all the survivors, and a bunch of people who are definitely not there join in. And Sydney then tells a pushy Jake that her shift is over and she's going home. He tries to get her to stay, but she doesn't want to celebrate the tragedy. And he implies that he's going to fire her if she doesn't let him buy her a drink, but she still refuses. And clip 21.
You're fired.
Too late. I quit.
Now, I've never been in this situation before. It happens a lot on TV and movies, of course. It's like, no, too late. They already fired you.
Yeah. That's not what late means.
Yeah. Also, even if it's the other way where it's like, you can't fire me, I quit. If they already said you're fired, then they did.
Yeah, they actually can fire you. That's what just happened.
Right. And also, let them fire you, then you can get unemployment. Are you stupid?
Yeah.
Anyway, as Sydney shambles off, Amanda defends her. Sydney was trying to be a friend. And then Jake goes over to Joe and tries to make her dance with him, claiming it's their song. Clip 22.
Come on, I mean, I don't want to dance with you when you're drunk.
Oh, no, wasn't in your vocabulary when you were with my brother. I'm sorry.
Jake,
I
let me go.
I didn't say that. Let's just dance.
What is your problem? Let me go.
Stay the hell away from her.
Hey, back off.
That's fucking Rocky Marciano over here. Matt's second punching scene in the episode.
And Grant Cho's face is so funny that he's like, oh, okay. Rocky Marciano. Here we go.
Yeah. This is all gift in the visual aids, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Matt, like, maybe social work yourself a little bit, because you're having a tough time. So Matt, again, pulls Matt off, this time off Jake, goes into his office, and Joe follows and finds him crying at his desk. And when she comes in, he snuffles that he killed his brother. Like, bro, we know. And the next day, Michael's auditioning / sexually harassing hot receptionist applicants when Peter comes in. He's got his coat slung over his shoulder. He's holding it with one finger. He's the 80s man. Like, oh, I know, God. It's 95, but
he really
80s
is.
Man. Says the position's been filled, and then explains to a testy Michael that if they hire someone sexy, they're going to get distracted chasing skirt and competing with each other.
23 Skidoo.
Yes. Especially if you hire Phyllis. Anyway, Michael needs to get the employment agency to send over someone neither of them could ever be attracted to, and then leaves. Sydney enters. Since she can tell Michael's not paying attention, she prepares to leave, asking him to send any job openings he hears of her way. And hey, she's got one. He's got one, rather. Which, like, neither of you is going to be attracted to Sydney. Have you looked at her?
Yeah, what?
But okay. So then, as Peter paces, the court shrink is telling the judge that Kimberly's competent to stand trial, and Peter's got some questions. Clip 23.
What exactly do you base your opinion on, Doctor?
On the fact that she's vicious, sadistic, and still has the marbles to manipulate even you, Doctor.
Well, I guess it is a lot easier to dropkick the tough cases into the court systems rather than to cure them.
First, I am attacked by a pencil-wielding patient, now by a love-struck surgeon.
Peter, he does have a point.
Gentlemen, I'm not in love with Kimberly. We're friends, and my friend has a long and drawn-out trial to face.
What about your other friends who were her victims?
Calvin, please. Kimberly's not just a patient here. She's a doctor on staff at this hospital. Now, if there's any question as to her sanity, don't we owe her another session with a new psychiatrist?
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
You're wasting your time.
Look, if it makes you happy, put it in your report.
Stick it in a blog, Dr. Felicity. I mean, guys, like if you're going to drag this over multiple episodes, like the monotone rule is not that difficult to understand. Either she knew that what she was doing was wrong, she did it anyway, or she doesn't, ergo she's not competent.
Right.
Doesn't mean she's not insane, means she's not legally insane, mm-hmm. means she's competent. Figure it out. Please figure out what you're doing with the story and do it. Thanks.
That night, a sheepish Jake comes to see Joe, which is not easy since he's still using a cane and she lives upstairs. But he apologizes for having been a jerk the night before, and she forgives him. And then he says he needs her, and she needs him too. I would need him also, looking the way he does in this friggin' scene, which is hot. You can see him in the visual aids, looking very mm-hmm. sad also. A good look for him. But, you know, thank God these two figured it out again for now, because the previous mode was very tiresome.
True.
And that's it. Let us name our episode MVP.
Matt.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it was self-destructive, but I enjoy that the character is finally getting to be the Jake. Like, why not?
Yeah. Relatedly, I'm going to say Alicia for being the one to be like, stop this shit. It is making my job harder.
Yeah. And that's also in the visual aid. She has a pretty classic like,
yeah.
Zip face it. And hand gesture that is very pro. I enjoy
it. Yep. Agree. Least valuable player.
Dr. God. Felicity. How's he supposed to put it in the report? His hand is pinned to his desk. Also, who over the age of 8 would not see that coming? That she's like, if yes. I could just have a pencil, like, no.
No
pencils.
No.
Crayons.
Yeah. Pastel crayon, perhaps. God. Again, we are spoiled for choice.
It's true. As always.
I'm going to say Brooke for not seeing this swerve coming. Because she mm-hmm. should have. I don't care how much mother loved you. Figure it out.
Yeah, how mother loved you is an open question, but I guess we'll get into it next time.
Ooh.
Also next time and again with this, Matt sets a trap for Paul, Jane steps on toes at Mackenzie Hart, and Alan's Eeyorehausen by proxy syndrome has Brooke fixing to open a can of whoop-ass. You should open a couple of cans of Pepto-Bismol before you check out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats, including audio, to advance certain short cons. You're welcome, Allison. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And you're our Patreon's responsibility now, but we're up to the job. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. That's all at patreon.com/againwiththis. Please join today. I'm Crappy Inheritance, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Cafeteria Kerfuffle, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Nutburger T. Cole. Talk to you next time.